What is your relationship with complaining? Is it always just kind of right there on the tip of your tongue? Maybe you complain sometimes. Would your closest friends or your family, would they describe your relationship with complaining differently than you would describe yourself? And what about gratitude? Are you more likely to complain, or are you more likely to express thankfulness? Now, years ago, I was working at a church down in Midland, Texas, my home church that I grew up in, and I wanted to take a group from the church to Haiti on a mission trip. And the whole purpose behind the trip was that I wanted the people within my community to experience something that would shock their systems, okay? I wanted them to experience poverty on a level that they'd never dreamed of. I wanted them really to develop a heart of gratitude. That's what I was aiming at. I wanted them to have an appreciation for all that they had and a realization of just how good their life was. I wanted really to overwhelm them with an experience. And Haiti's good for that. And so we took a trip to Haiti. We left Midland, Texas. We flew to Fort Lauderdale first, got there late at night. We were supposed to go to a hotel, but we got there so late, and we had to get there so early the next morning that we decided to just kind of like camp out in the airport overnight, which meant that I did not sleep at all. Get up about 4 a.m., and we began going through the process. Our flight takes off at 6. All sorts of different things in this story that I could go through. I'll just tell you that eventually we arrive in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, which is great, except that that's not where the mission is located that we're going to. So we land in Port-au-Prince, but we have to take a bus ride from Port-au-Prince up to the north coast of Haiti to a little community called Saint-Louis-du-Nord. And as we're working that process out, we're part of a much, much larger group. They're pulling all of us together, and they begin putting us on these school buses that are going to transport us from Port-au-Prince up to Saint-Louis-du-Nord. Now, these school buses were not your normal school buses. They were these massive tanks of school buses, okay? Think like massive off-road tires. They had this big old grill guard on the front. This was like school buses on steroids. Now, maybe you've heard that word steroids before. Anyways, big, intimidating school buses. Now, I've been told through my research and preparing for this trip that this bus ride was supposed to be about 6 hours long. And so we take off, and this bus is going way faster than it should. A little goat lost its life in the process of all this, okay? And we're traveling down these roads, and they're rough, and it's difficult, and it's dusty, and we're in the school bus. There's no air conditioning. The dirt is just kind of flying in, and it's like you're breathing it, okay? It's difficult. We're just flying down the road as fast as we can. I'm sitting up at the front of the bus with my head against the seat in front of me because I haven't slept now in over 30 hours. I'm exhausted, but I can't sleep on the bus either. In the process of traveling, we were told that about halfway we were going to stop. We were told that about 3 hours in, we were going to stop at a gas station to kind of take a break, rest, go to the bathroom if we need to, and then we'd finish the rest of the trip. And so halfway, we stop at something that is not a gas station. And there are no bathrooms, but we stop. And we get out, and we kind of stretch our legs. When we're getting back into the bus, I noticed that there were these young girls who were part of a different group that were going with us that were in the back of the bus. And they just were like green from riding in the back of the bus, just up and down, bouncing, rough roads. And I felt compassion, and so I gave them my seat at the front, and I went to the back. And I found out that the next 3 hours were not 3 hours, they were 5 hours. We weren't halfway. And it was these winding roads, and it was up and down, and it was bumpy, and all the dirt, I just breathed it. And I'm not a motion sick kind of a person, but that day I was feeling it big time, right? Like really, really rough. And by the time we finally get to the mission, I'm pushing like 40 hours without sleep. And I haven't eaten in like 10 hours. And my attitude wasn't good. I guess that's a nice way of putting it. I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm sweaty, I'm sticky. I'm covered in dirt from the roads. It's exhausting. It's miserable. And as we get into the mission, we're setting up where we're going to be able to sleep and all that kind of stuff for the next few days while we're there. We're getting all that set up, and I walk by this room in this large mission compound, okay, that we're at. And as I walk by, I look in, and it's like a little store. It was like kind of like a place for people to buy their little keepsake things and all that kind of stuff for their experience in Haiti, all that stuff around. And I'm looking at it, and that's fine. There's already some people in there who are buying stuff. They have much better attitudes than I do at that point. And I look and I notice that in the back of this room, there's a yellow T-shirt hanging on the wall, and it's got a picture of a school bus on it. And it has this lettering over the top that says, "I survived the bus ride." Now, I want you to remember that I really wanted my group to find a heart of gratitude. That's what I was aiming at as their leader. I wanted them to have an appreciation for all that they had, a realization of how good their life was. And within hours of being there, I felt like I'd been kicked in the teeth. Hated it, everything about it. And even now, as I tell the story, there is nothing about that yellow shirt with the school bus on it that elicits any emotional feeling within me, anything near the word gratitude, right? It haunts me, right? So what's your relationship with complaining? We've covered a lot of things in this series on grace, but we've ignored one of grace's natural enemies, the complaint. The grace that you've received should cause you gratitude. Complaining looks like a lack of appreciation for grace. Gratitude is even an act of grace. It's a response to the grace that you've received, and it's giving grace back forward. It's that attitude of thankfulness. But complaining is such a natural behavior that there's a good chance that this enemy of grace is active in your life. And not only does complaining fight against the grace that you've received, but it also causes God, potentially, to stop blessing you. Go all the way back to the Old Testament. It's in the beginning, Genesis chapter 12. There's an interaction with God that he has with this man named Abraham. And he tells him that you're going to go to somewhere. I'm going to take you there. You'll know when you get there. I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to bless you. Or you're going to have a great land, all that stuff. And it's all great promises. And God does it. He does it. He begins building a nation with this one man and his wife. And it takes a long time. It takes generations to pass, hundreds of years later. But eventually, Abraham's family becomes a nation, and they're called Israelites. But they're a struggling people. It hasn't been easy for them. In fact, they are now living not in the land that God had promised them, but they're in a place called Egypt, where they're slaves. They've grown into this great nation, but they are oppressed by a nation that is greater. And so God goes and finds a leader. It's a man named Moses to help free these people from Egypt. And he makes a promise to Moses that sounds a lot like that promise he made to Abraham. It's in Exodus 3. He says that he's going to bring these Israelites, this nation, up out of this land, Egypt, into a good, spacious land, a land that flows with milk and honey. And God does. He frees this massive nation of Israel, and approximately 2 million people make this exodus out of Egypt. They begin this trek toward this promised land, and it feels like grace, an incredible grace to be rescued from their oppressors. Now, maybe as we've gone through this series, you've been able to look back in your life, and you can see the things that you've been rescued from. It feels like incredible grace. Maybe you could say that you're not an addict anymore. That's grace. Maybe you can say that your relationships aren't toxic anymore. That's grace. Maybe you can say that your financial struggles aren't as oppressive as they used to be. That's grace. Maybe you can say that your bitterness and your anger don't rule your life anymore. That's grace. And that grace should lead you to a place of incredible gratitude. Because if you can see where you were, and you can see how far you've come, surely gratitude follows. And so surely this nation of slaves that has now found freedom is going to simply live in this joy of their newfound freedom. They're going to celebrate this incredible grace that they've received. Surely gratitude definitively marks them in their attitudes, right? 3 days later, just 3 days after making it out of Egypt, the people are complaining because they don't have water. They'd found some water, but they couldn't drink it, and so they complain. And I get it, right? Like, it doesn't make sense that God would just lead them out of Egypt into this desert just so that they could die of thirst. It doesn't make sense. They're going to some promised land, but they're not there yet. They have to get through this desert. And God hears them. And God knows they need water, and so he gives them water. But there was, unfortunately, a pattern among this nation. If you do the math, about 45 days after they had initially been freed, the nation is now grumbling against God. It says that the whole nation grumbles against Moses, and they are so wrapped up in complaints that they start misremembering their past. They start looking at their time in Egypt as if it wasn't all that bad. They start remembering the food and the water, the drinks that they had in Egypt, and they begin telling the story of their time in Egypt as if it was something amazing, like the glory days of their past. They kind of leave out that whole slavery part, right? They're forgetting where they came from. And all they can see is their current moment. And so God hears them. And he miraculously gives them manna, which is kind of like bread. But they don't say thank you to God. Instead, they continue to grumble. And in Numbers 11, we're told that they began complaining because all they had was the manna, and they wanted some meat. And so God has reached his limit. He responds pretty harshly, but also I think it's kind of funny. Maybe something you want to repeat to your kid. He says, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'll give you meat. I'll give you some good stuff to eat. I'm going to give it to you every day. The same stuff, same meat, quail, every single day. So much of it, in fact, that at one point, you're going to eat it until it just comes out of your nose. Yeah, that you've been there, haven't you? God takes our grumbling personally. He graciously provides for his children. But instead of noticing and being grateful, the people complain. Grumbling and complaining, it's the natural enemy of grace because it overlooks the greatness of the grace that we've received. It's looking so closely at the exact situation or the exact circumstance that you're in that you're forgetting about anything outside of that moment. All you can see is the very specific, tight little spot that God isn't gracing you exactly the way you want him to be graced, and he's not doing it at the exact time that you wanted him to do it. You refuse to let yourself see anything outside of that experience, and so you forget all the other ways that he's gotten you to where you are right now. As Jesus followers, this is a really big deal because it isn't just about us. It ruins our witness to the world around us. Grumbling and complaining undermine the good news of the gospel, the good news. When we grumble and complain, it doesn't sound like we have good news. It means that we're ignoring the generosity and the faithfulness of our God. That's why Paul speaks to this in the New Testament, in the book of Philippians. He writes to that church and he says, do everything without complaining or arguing. We could spend some time on that phrase. We're going to skip that word arguing, okay? Do everything without complaining, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault in a crooked and depraved generation. The world around you is a crooked and depraved place. And if we grumble, if we complain, it causes us to look just like the crooked and depraved generation around us. But we're not supposed to look like that. We have something that the rest of the world should want. We should live so differently that it causes people to be drawn in. In fact, that's what Paul says. He says, do everything without complaining and arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, and then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. If you're a complainer, your star isn't very shiny. There's nothing attractive to the world around you and how you're living and how you're behaving. If you're a complainer, the word of life that you live by doesn't look appealing. There's nothing attractive to the world around you if you live with that kind of attitude. I've been called out for having that attitude before. Have you? Several years after that trip to Haiti, you would have thought I'd learned, right? I was now working at a church up in Indiana, and I led a group down to Southwest Missouri at a place called Camp Barnabas, which is a camp designed specifically for adults with special needs. Mostly adults that week that we worked with had either Down syndrome or autism. And I was assigned a young man about 22, 23 years old who had Down syndrome. Spent the entire week with him. Anything he did, I did. It's almost as if we were attached to each other. It was hard work, and it was really stretching for me. Took me out of my comfort zone for sure. And on top of that, it was just kind of a hard place to do it, like at a camp. Now, this camp was nice. This is the nicest camp I've ever been to. Incredible amenities, beautiful camp, great setup. But they wanted to give their campers a camp experience, which meant that one of the things we did was one night, instead of sleeping in the nice cabins that they gave us that had air conditioning and all that stuff, they had us sleep in tents, which that was fine, except that they didn't have enough tents for me. And they didn't have enough cots for me. And so I had like a little pad out in the middle of the grass that I got to sleep on. And like there was a spider. Like I'm not making that up. There was a real spider. I saw it. It was big. It was bigger than a tarantula. This spider was ginormous. And it wasn't a tarantula. It was scarier. It was big. I typically am not scared of spiders, but this one got me, all right? It freaked me out. And I can remember like the day after that, my group has like an hour kind of a break where we were able to come back together and just kind of talk and debrief some of the stuff that was going on and hear some of these stories. Man, I was just so negative. I was complaining about having to sleep outside. I was complaining about the spiders and armadillos. I don't know if you know this, but armadillos, when they move through the woods, they're blind. And so they don't sound like an armadillo making their way through the woods. They sound like a Yeti. Like it's terrifying, the amount of commotion that they make. And that was happening to me all night long. So between the spiders and the armadillos, I got no sleep. I'm just complaining, man. This guy in our group finally just looks at me and says, dude, you got to fix your attitude. This isn't good. And he was right. Because as long as my attitude was like that, I was hurting my opportunity to minister to this incredible young man that I was given the honor of hanging out with all week. If I was negative, then the whole time, if I'm negative, I'm hurting him. And beyond that, I'm supposed to be like leading this group of people at this camp, and I'm just like a mess, man. It was garbage. It's unacceptable. I'm glad that that guy called me out that day because I needed it. Because it's dangerous and it's toxic to the gospel when we complain. We can push it even further than that. Complaining is blasphemous. Because when I'm complaining, it's as if I'm saying that I don't believe that God's taking care of me. It's as if I'm saying I don't believe that he's going to keep his promises, that he can't redeem what it is that I'm going through. Complaining is a refusal to trust God and acknowledge his grace in my life. Whining is the opposite of worship. I don't know if you ever thought about that. When we whine, when we complain, it's the opposite of worship. When we complain, it's the opposite of grace. And maybe you don't think so. Maybe you would say it differently. Maybe you would say that thankfulness or gratitude is the opposite of complaining. But grace and thanksgiving are so very closely related, so close, that when you sit down for your Thanksgiving meal, before you eat, you say a prayer and you call it saying grace. Because being thankful is expressing the graces we've received. And complaining is the rival of grace. Oh, it's such a big deal, guys. It's why God actually commands us to have gratitude. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, he says, be joyful always, pray continually, and give thanks in all circumstances. Oh, man, that's a huge statement. It's a directive. It's straightforward. It's not an invitation. It's instructive. It's a command. Give thanks. And he doesn't leave any room for us with any sort of excuses. There aren't any exemptions to the rule. There's no exclusions to this command. It's in all circumstances. All includes every circumstance, any situation that you find yourself in. Give thanks. It's not a suggestion. Now, why? Why would God tell us to do this? I love asking that question because sometimes I talk to people and they give me this impression that they think that God is just this like, I don't know, Wizard of Oz, like the wizard, like in the background, and he's just pulling levers and he's just making random decisions that don't have to make any sense, right? Like he's just arbitrarily choosing what rules he wants you to have and what rules he doesn't want you to have. Why would God demand for us to be grateful? Is it just arbitrary? Does it matter? Why would God demand for us to show gratitude in all circumstances? Well, it's almost like God is smart. It's like he knows how we were designed. Because research has found, in fact, it's proven, that the more we complain, the more we find things to complain about. There was a study that assigned two groups different objectives. One group was assigned to journal their irritations, to write out things that bothered them throughout their day. And another group was assigned to journal their thanksgiving, that every day they had to write down things that they were thankful for. And what they found was that over time, those who were writing about thankfulness and gratitude had greater overall energy and enthusiasm. They slept better. They were less depressed. And those who were keeping track of all the things that annoyed them were the complete opposite. Because complaining causes us to become increasingly obsessed with our less than perfect circumstances. It turns out that complaining is bad for us. And gratitude is good for us. Now, what's fascinating about this research is that they were assigned to journal intentionally. They were told that they had to do this. But what happened was all the participants on both sides began doing the work unintentionally, because what we intentionally focus on becomes easier and easier to give our attention to. And so people who are annoyed tend to become more annoyed. You ever notice that? You ever notice how a few things happen in your day and you just get focused on it and just bad things keep happening and you keep complaining about it? It's because you set your focus there. People who are annoyed tend to become more annoyed. People who are grateful tend to see more things, to become more grateful. Because what you focus on, you become. And so the danger is that grumbling, like grace, has a way of becoming the lens through which we look at life. If you focus on things to complain about, you're going to miss all the ways that God is blessing you. And God takes it personally. It's not some small thing when we complain. It's as if we're ignoring everything that he's already done. So how can we fix it? How can we become more gracious with gratitude? Start with this. Go back to that research project. Just start by writing out things you're grateful for. Keep a gratitude journal. I'm not necessarily the journaling type of person. I've done it a few times in my life. I've always found it to be very valuable. If you know that you need to grow in your gratitude, I challenge you to write down 3 to 5 things every day that you'll be thankful for, even if they're small. It doesn't have to be big. It could be something as simple as a good meal, a kind word, whatever it is. And just like that study that we referenced earlier, I promise you, if you start with intention and you find gratitude every single day, it's going to become easier and easier to do. And it's going to become natural, and you're going to see a change in yourself as well. Maybe you need to start practicing the expression of things. What would it look like if you challenged yourself to just say thank you to 3 different people every single day for something? If you told people that you appreciate them, if you could find a friend or a coworker, stranger, anybody, if you could verbalize gratitude every single day, it's going to strengthen your relationship with those people, guaranteed, but it's also going to reinforce your thankfulness. You're going to start looking at the world through that kind of a lens. You're going to find more things to say thank you for, because what you focus on, you become. Maybe you need to do that with God. Maybe you need to just express thanks in the form of prayer. It's a significant part, thankfulness and gratitude. It's a significant part of prayer. If you sense that you've been ungrateful to your God, it would probably be good for you to practice just saying thank you, finding things that you can thank him for, appreciating him, and that could become kind of like that anchor to this entire gratitude routine. Maybe you need to change your perspective. Maybe you're asking the wrong questions. Talked about that a little bit today. Sometimes we need to change our perspective. We need to reframe the challenges you're facing. If you become so locked in on a struggle or a pain that you're going through in this moment, maybe instead of dwelling on the negatives, you can switch to something positive. You can ask questions like, what can I learn from this season? Or you could say things like, even in the midst of this, what else is still good in my life? What else is going in a way that I can see God is blessing me? It can build resilience. It's definitely going to build gratitude. Feeds itself. One thing you can cut out is comparison. You've got to limit that. We've got to get rid of it. I think this is one of the reasons why, as a culture, we've become less thankful and gracious. It's the rise of social media, where we live in a world where everything is in comparison to everyone else, and it kills us inside. It takes from us. We begin measuring our lives against the people around us. We begin seeing the things that we don't have. And so we see the vacation that we didn't take. We see the car that we don't get to drive. We see the house that we don't get to live in. And it builds resentment and discontentment in us. And so limit comparison. It's going to kill you. Focus on your own blessings. Reduce your envy. Another thing you can do, which has been proven to work for a very long time is actually just serving. There's a different level of gratefulness in people who serve or sacrifice for the sake of someone else. You can do it through a charity, you can do it here through the church, whatever it is. But it's amazing how small acts can change your perspective and how it can deepen your own appreciation. And if you go back to my trip that I took to Haiti, I can tell you that one of the best things that happened was the life change that took place within the group of people I got to go with. The reason I could tell you that the bus ride was worth it, I didn't buy a shirt, okay, but the reason I could say that it was worth it, the reason it was worth it to experience the extreme heat, the difficulty, the lack of sleep, the earthquake aftershocks, all of it was because some people had a massive shift in their perspective and it changed their life. They served in a difficult place and it did something to their heart. And it wasn't even about the people we were serving. It sounds cruel or harsh, but I didn't take a group to Haiti to help the people of Haiti. I took a group to Haiti to help the people of the group that I was leading. That's what they needed. And it worked. It changed them into who they needed to be. Because serving is proven to help with your mental health. It tends to make you more grateful. Gives you a different perspective. One last thing. You could also try to reverse engineer God's grace in your life. Kind of a strange idea. Kyle Eidelman, in his book that Doc and I have been using called Grace is Greater, he tells a story backwards. He kind of works through his life backwards until he gets to the strange evening one night at a restaurant where he was growing up, where he refused to go to the bathroom because of how dirty it was and went home, and that led to this chain of events that eventually led to him being the preacher at a large church in Louisville at Southeast Christian Church. Okay, now, not like a next day kind of situation, years and years and years, right? But one decision set off a chain of events that put him in the position to end up where he ended up. And I can look back in my life and see those dirty bathroom moments, right? Those times when I thought life wasn't good, my hardest times, the times when I complained the most, or the times when I even cried out to God the most, I can now see how those moments were being used by God to bring me to where I am now, even to the point of where I'm standing in front of you today. There's seasons when I couldn't figure out what God was up to. And now I can look back and I can see all the ways he was blessing and setting up what was next for me. It was grace. It was always grace. Sometimes it's hard to see anything other than what you've been facing in your life and the exact moment that you're in. Gratitude is all about changing your perspective. Complainers and grumblers, they focus on themselves. Complainers and grumblers focus on the moment that's right in front of them. They lose sight of the larger picture. We need to change. In fact, that's what it's all about. When we come to Jesus, we call it conversion, meaning we change. Conversion means that we replace old material with a new, better material. The old me loved to complain because the old me was all about me. But when I convert to Jesus, my focus changes because it's not about me, it's about Jesus. And I refocus, and the people who are always who are the most grateful, people who are always grateful, they tend to focus away from themselves. Guys, you've got to change the focal point. It's going to change your attitude. Don't focus on your circumstances, focus on God and how God can use those circumstances. I promise you, the more you feed gratitude, the more gracious you become, the easier it gets. And this isn't even about just trying to find a way to obey God because he's given this arbitrary rule. Like, it's good for you. It's healthy for you. It's hard. It's real hard to change. But it's worth working through. And if you want to see it done well, I want you to watch this video of my friends.